Hello and welcome back to Techonomics. I'm your host, Jason Middleton. And we're diving back into the paranoia that has been handheld during this presidential election cycle. We have seen recent research that shows two-thirds of the American voting public believes the economy is rigged in favor of the rich. That's a pretty big consensus, especially for Americans. And only slightly smaller is the consensus that there's an active conspiracy going on at the top of the economic ladder.
Conspiracy theories are for losers.
Now, he means those who lose elections, not in a pejorative sense. An economic conspiracy of that size and scope would be really hard to maintain, even for just 1% of Americans. But the thought does seem to be top of mind for a plurality of voters. Here's part two of our rigged economy theme.
My name is Joe Yuzinski. I'm an associate professor of political science at the University of Miami.
All right, let's start at the beginning. It feels like I'm not the first media person to reach out to you this political season. Would that be fair to say?
I'm taking 2 to 3 calls a day from the media to talk about conspiracy theories. And at this point, it's become so routine that the media has switched from asking me to talk about conspiracy theories, and instead they're asking me to talk about how much I talk about conspiracy theories.
Then I'm going to pivot back, because I need some basic platform to work off of. So why the spike in conspiracy theory interest right now, as far as where you sit?
So the reason why we have a spike right now is because of two candidates this year. One is Donald Trump and the other one is Bernie Sanders. Both of them had their campaigns based on conspiracy theories. Donald Trump believed that the Republican and Democratic establishments were corrupt and that they were conspiring against us. He also believed there were many foreigners and foreign governments conspiring against us. Bernie Sanders believed that the 1% had rigged our entire economy and our entire political systems. So these were two candidates that got a lot of media attention, and because of them and because of their rhetoric, they brought conspiracy theories to the fore, particularly in the media. Now, one thing we don't want to confuse is elites talking about conspiracy theories and the media reporting on those conspiracy theories and people actually believing in them. Those are two very different things.
Fair enough. Well, let's start with the media portion of it, since I can take a little bit of ownership for that. And the reason I'm calling you is because I'm looking at a research study from Edison Research, and they're saying that, yeah, the American public does believe the economy, back to your point about Bernie Sanders, has been rigged, and it has been rigged in favor of the top 1%. Am I just perpetuating that myth, or is there something more here?
Well, one thing that we find when we study the media coverage of conspiracy theories is that most of the coverage is not very sympathetic to those conspiracy theories. So we did a study over the course of a few years where we looked at everything that was written in the mainstream news and in blogs about a conspiracy theory, and 70% of it was negative. They said, this is crazy. Why does anyone believe this? This can't possibly be true. Only 10% of it was sympathetic towards the conspiracy theory. So what this tells us is, yeah, there's a lot of talk about conspiracy theories, but when it comes to deciding if they're true or not, the media usually favors, you know, this is false and people who believe this are crazy. So that's why we don't want to confuse the coverage of it with the actual belief in it. But to your point, the idea that the economy is rigged or controlled by people at the top is something that the media does tend to be sympathetic to more so than other conspiracy theories, and that may be one reason why it gets a little more play.
Well, that's fair. So I'm typical. I'll accept that, because my role as a journalist has been to be skeptical, so I can understand why some of it might skew towards the anti-conspiracy theory, if you will. But with the Bernie campaign specifically and the leaked emails, we saw proof that at least a party was lining up against it. And that kind of spilled over into the economic research that I quoted earlier from Edison. And you're saying that you're seeing more sympathetic when it comes to the economy. Is there another way that we should look at that? I guess I'm asking you to help me unpack what I'm reading as far as actual data research and emails that have been leaked that I've read, and kind of make me believe, yeah, this conspiracy could be true.
I bring this up about Bernie's conspiracy theories in a lot of the interviews that I do with the media, and often they challenge me and say, well, is it really a conspiracy theory to say that the 1% control the entire economy? You know, because most of the journalists I talk to are on the left, and it's part of, you know, ideology on the left that, you know, rich, powerful people have too much power and too much riches, and the point of a lot of government programs is to sort of take some of that away and redistribute it. But what I say is, if you say that the economy is rigged, that means that you're saying a small group of people are purposely controlling everything in our economy,
right,
which is like all aspects of our life. And we have a $20 trillion economy. 1% of our population is not controlling a $20 trillion economy. It's fairy tale talk. Now, there are reasonable critiques we can make about the economy, but saying that it's been rigged from the top down is not one of them. It's unrational. And I know there are a lot of your listeners are not going to like that, but that's simply the case. And the same thing when we say our entire political system is rigged. Our entire political system is huge. We have many different levels of government spread out across a massive geography. There isn't any small group of people who have rigged the entire thing. There are tons of small groups that have rigged small parts of it, right? And that's called pluralism. You have lots of groups battling for power. And the good thing about it is nobody gets to control everything because of it.
And we're talking conspiracy theories. Are they a fallback? Are they like a comfort blanket for when people think things are not going their way for reasons they cannot control?
Absolutely. And one phrase I like to use is conspiracy theories are for losers. And I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. I mean it in a descriptive sense. So I'll talk about rigged just a little bit. So in 2012, we did a survey prior to the presidential election, and we asked people, if your candidate doesn't win, will you believe that fraud would have been involved? And 62% of people said yes.
Wow.
That if their candidate didn't win, it would have been due to fraud. We then followed up after the election and asked those same people, do you believe that fraud was involved in the election? That number cut almost in half. Do you know why?
No.
It's because only Republicans at that point, because they had lost, believed there was fraud. The Democrats had no reason to believe that there was fraud. They got what they wanted.
Right.
Everything was hunky-dory to them. So what we find is that prior to elections, there's always the security dilemma of, you know, each side thinks the other side is cheating and getting an unfair advantage. And after the election, only the losers have to solve their wounds with conspiracy theories.
That totally makes sense to me, and I'm glad you explained it that way. If we pivot back to this macro conspiracy thing that we were talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Is it true that conspiracy theories, the bigger they are, the more people have to be involved and the harder it is to hold it together?
Absolutely. So if we were to talk about, you know, is climate change a conspiracy theory? Think of all the scientists across the world and the government agencies and multinational agencies that would have to be involved in this. It would be people at every single university on the planet, every scientist. A conspiracy that big, you know, the odds of somebody spilling the beans or getting caught is just so large because of the number of people that would have to be involved. I mean, you know, at work, if two people start having an affair, everyone finds out within a week. And that's low stakes and only two people.
Right.
Imagine if you have millions of people involved in something in high stakes. People are going to find out.
What's the upside to conspiracy theories? Because to me, as a skeptic, as a journalist, I see use in these because they question authority on their base. Am I off on that?
I wouldn't use the word authority. I would use the word power. And what's so good about conspiracy theories, I know we always talk about the bad, but what's good about them is that they act as a watchdog. They act as a balance against power. All conspiracy theories are about power. Who has it? What are they doing with it? And what are they doing with it when we're not looking? What are they doing that we can't see? And that's an important part of democracy. Democracy requires that the citizens be very vigilant and that we watch what the powerful are doing, whether it's powerful people in government or powerful people in business. The media doesn't always do the best of jobs watching the powerful people. Sometimes they drop the ball. And that's where conspiracy theorists can come in. And there are examples in history where they've done a good job. We know a lot more about the JFK assassination because of conspiracy theorists. Mm-hmm. We know more about 9/11 today because of conspiracy theorists. So even if they're not right all the time, they still push to bring more information to the foreground. And that's a good thing.
Professor Yuzinski, are you going to run the same kind of survey after this election when it comes to do you think that the election was rigged for or against your candidate? Because if so, I'd love to circle back and have another discussion.
That would be great. I have a survey in the field right now to get a grasp on what people are thinking prior to the election, and we will be rerunning it in the 2 weeks after the election to see how people's attitudes have changed.
All right. If I'm not preempted in December, I hope we can talk again.
Wonderful. I look forward to it.
That was Joe Yuzinski. He's a professor at the University of Miami, specializing in conspiracy theories, and his phone has been ringing off the hook with calls from media types like us. Technically, I tweeted at Professor Yuzinski. There's plenty of angst to go around right now, and it likely will dissipate after the presidential election, but it won't dissipate anytime soon, that's for sure. We have links to this and all of our interview segments at KGORadio.com/techonomics. We also post a playlist of the music we used here on the show. This week, we have a cinematic theme going. That is posted at KGORadio.com/techonomics or Facebook.com/techonomicsradio. Coming up after the break, we throw off the shackles of this terrestrial existence and we pursue the goal of Mars.
The big jump to Mars is going to be hard and difficult, but it's also solvable.
Can humans become a multi-planet species in the next 20 years? One award-winning space journalist thinks so, and so does National Geographic, because they not only backed his new book, but also a new television series about the pursuit of Mars. That's coming up after the break. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.